Well, good morning. And so as we get deeper into the election cycle, I'm going to have more and more folks on the show, have Philip Van Veen on this morning. As I was telling you this incredible story of the weather, and we're going to have, I believe Bob, the weather guy, is going to be on later to the second hour, but we do have some interesting weather stories before that. A large number of dams in Carolina and South Carolina are failed, or they've just opened them up, or they're going to fail. So there's more water that's going to be coming down and over there. But we'll talk about that with Bob. The U.S. Coast Guard has called off the search for the missing crew members in the El Faro, that 800-foot cargo ship. Apparently, the equipment had failed. They were not in contact with any sophisticated information. Although, I mean, the crew members were sending out emails, so that doesn't quite wash with me. But anyway, they know that since they were these crew members had to deploy for the ones that made it overboard into life rafts or survival suits, that they would have been getting into 130 mile an hour winds, 50-foot waves. I mean, there's just not survivable. Now, remnants of Hurricane Ojo are headed towards Alaska, believe it or not. And I think they're saying this is the first time, whether that's true or not, but first time that they're having a hurricane event or a hurricane remnant come up there. So very weird. But they also have an area that looks like it's directly over us. Maybe Tucson to Las Cruces, that's popping up on that particular chart. So lots of weather events, folks. Now, Hillary Clinton, they have all of her emails were backed up by another company. I think it's a Connecticut company, but they are going to have everything she ever did. So anything that she fibbed about, they're going to be able to find out. The FBI is involved, obviously. And but here is a little bit on Hurricane Ojo.
Ojo, still hanging on to hurricane status. You're looking at the latest stats coming out of the Central Pacific Hurricane Center. It's losing its tropical characteristics. And so you look at it from a satellite perspective, its low-level circulation is sort of exposed right now. However, it is going to get some help from some upper-level wind energy and some energy out there to be certainly a punch into the next system that will be affecting us up here in the Alaska Panhandle. So expect some windy conditions, expect some rain up here, and it's going to be one of the features that sort of adds some moisture into the system that's going to be affecting us in the Northwest. Always interesting how it's all connected, right? It's all connected. Look at all this rain coming in. A lot of wind as well this weekend. Already saw some storm warnings up for conditions out there in the high seas off the coast of Washington.
Hurricanes with their distinct eye, those spiraling bands of thunderstorms, some of the meanest storms on Earth. But what makes them tick? Let's break down the anatomy of a hurricane and show it to you. First thing, we'll start with warm sea surface temperatures, okay, at least 80 degrees, and it's warm, moist air that'll really fuel the hurricane. So let's bring it down and show you exactly how this thing works. Look down in here. There's that spiraling air with a surface low that forms that comes inward, rotates counterclockwise, and then it's pulled up into the middle of the storm. But it's up above here where you've got high pressure up at the top of these thunderstorms, and what you're going to see now is an outflow, basically high pressure spiraling clockwise around the storm, ventilating the storm. So it's high pressure at the upper part of the storm, low pressure at the bottom, causing you a very mature storm. The towering thunderstorms really then begin to get their act together. So all these things really working in conjunction. But one thing that can really be a hindrance to hurricanes is what happens above with the upper air wind flow. If you have very strong winds at the upper part of a hurricane, that's called wind shear. And all that really does is tears the top of the storm off, so you're spiraling updraft into that storm is tilted and it doesn't become very strong. You want that to be almost perfectly vertical. But that means you have to have very low wind shear at the top of your hurricane. And that allows for more thunderstorms to build vertically and really fuel the entire system. Let's cut this thing in half, though, and show you exactly how it all works as we dive down into this hurricane. It's the upwards and downwards moving air here that's really key in all this. So where you have the upward moving air here in red, that's where you have your thunderstorm bands that spiral around your hurricane. Where you have the blue bands, that's where you have descending air in your hurricane. What that does then is cause clear spots. You'll see this all the time on the radar, spiraling bands as that eye moves closer and closer to land, and that's really what can get you. In the middle there, the eye surrounded by the eye wall, and in the eye wall, that's where you really have the strongest part of the hurricane. Not exactly in the eye, the one that does the damage is the eye wall. The highest winds, the heaviest rain, the strongest surge, usually eye wall and right front quadrant. And then you've got the sinking air, by the way, that goes right down into the eye. Generally, the calmest part of the storm, even though it's the heartbeat of the hurricane itself. You'll oftentimes see clear skies right in the eye, calm winds, sometimes a little bit of overcast, but you'll know the difference distinctly between an eye and an eye wall. It is night and day. And that is the anatomy of a hurricane.
All right. So anyway, here is, we'll take a little break and come back. The fact of the matter is, though, there's a lot of strange weather events that I don't personally tie to global warming because I don't, the more I study it, the more I think it's just a political and media event that's meant to take over the economy. But there are certainly are changes in the weather. Which don't at all, in my opinion, prove that there is global warming, but there is some level of climate change that is always going on, and that's just all there is to it. 6:13, Kelly O'Connell Show, and we will be right back. Yeah, that's correct.
Have a seat, John. Yes. I was going to say, usually that's an insult, but... Gentlemen, my card. Doesn't mean you don't need a lawyer. Okay, was one segment enough for you guys? One segment enough? How many people did you guys invite? Sorry, because I just moved my law office and I lost my paralegal and I'm just so many things going on right now. So that's fine. You mean there's two more people coming? Oh, okay. What's up, Mike? Good. You've been on my show. All right, so you want to do the introduction to what you guys are doing? You prepared to do an introduction for what you're doing right now? Do one of you two guys be prepared to explain what you're doing, okay? All right, it's Kelly and of course, and we have Philip Van Veen waiting in the wings, but we also have PRC here, and we're promoting candidate forum today at the, is it the Galleria?
That's right, Kelly. It's a Galleria. It's 326 South Skeet. We have a mayoral a debate. It's great. Arturo here set the whole thing up. We're filming it. We're going to try to get it on television as soon as possible. Perhaps early next week.
Fantastic. So who's going to take part in it?
Okay, so far we've got confirmed.
Confirmed is Mayor Miguel Shiva, Miguel Silva, and Ms. Ortega. They've all confirmed to come and participate in the forum today. We'll have a panel One of our panelists is here, Mike Tejas. We have another lady, Lori Meeks, and some youth, Giovanni Uribe and Alegria Mendoza, bringing a youth perspective. Panel will be asking a question, and then the audience will also have an opportunity.
So how long is this thing going on?
For 2 hours. 2 hours from 6 to 8 p.m.
Where's it located?
Nopalitos Galleria, off of Mesquite Street, 326 South Mesquite Street.
What's it close to?
Nopalitos Restaurant, Nopalitos Restaurant.
Okay. And who's running this thing, or who's sponsoring it?
Well, who's sponsoring it right now is I'm working right now to building a C4 organization with Swap Action Fund, and I partnered with Nopalitos Galleria and PRC Productions to host it. So we're all co-hosting it. It's just an opportunity to bring voters in, meet the candidates, ask questions, become engaged, informed, and educated voters before this next coming municipal election.
All right. And so can anybody show up to this thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everybody's invited. The public's invited. They may get on television. How cool is that? We're going to have a real nice PA set up so that everyone can hear everyone's actions, reactions, and so on and so forth.
Can we have a halftime with a little karaoke action?
I can make that
okay,
happen.
Okay, let's do that.
We will be having a social afterwards where we'll have some cheese and some drinks there.
The cheese was delivered during the speeches.
That's the melted cheese.
Oh, melted cheese. Yeah. All right. All right. So this is kind of exciting. Now, we saw this Trump debate, the first one, the back and forth. How is the format of this going to be set up? How are the candidates going to communicate? Or is it just going to be answering direct questions from the audience with no back and forth between the candidates, or are they going to be able to kind of dig at one another?
Well, in the past, they've called it moderating, but I'm going to be reffing this one.
Antagonizing.
Well, I'll be the referee. So
do you have a trident, the three-pronged thing to poke people with?
Well, no, we got a whistle. All right. And that usually works, and a real big guy that'll escort them out.
And a boom pole. So we have a boom mic that we can kind of jab them with a little bit.
How about a shepherd's crook?
That might work.
Okay. And Mike Tejas, how are you involved in this?
I'm one of the panelists that'll be asking questions.
Cool. Do you know the questions you're going to ask, or are you going to be led by the spirit, the unction, as they say?
The questions we're going to ask will be more leaning towards what's going to happen next. What are their plans to do forward?
Uh-huh.
We won't sit and dig so much on what they didn't do as much as what are they going to do.
But isn't the past the best indicator of the future, Mike Tejas?
Well, when you have two of them from the past, all they're going to do is point the finger at each other.
Of dinosaurs.
I saw that on the NAACP debate. Some of the comments that were made, there was a little bit of finger point. And so,
did you think it was unsportsmanlike?
No, I think it was just unproductive.
Are you going to get ready to throw a flag? Did you bring flags to throw? Anybody's out of bounds?
Man. You bet. We're going to ask some hard questions, and we want some commitments.
Mike, I know you're a business owner. What's your biggest concern about the Mesilla Valley in the coming years?
Well, one of the things is that we don't raise taxes very much more than we've already raised them. It's becoming an expensive area to live in. The atmosphere is not friendly to businesses coming in, and, there's things we need to do a little bit different in order to encourage good paying jobs to come into this area. But, there's just things they need to do. We need to get some commitment from our candidates there. And, I'd like to ask them, if you can't accomplish what you're saying, would you be willing to step down after one term?
Well, I think Ken Miyagashima is already two terms into this puppy. So,
and this is the last chance for him.
He gets a third bite at the apple. That's interesting.
I don't think that it's a third bite at the apple. I think it's the end of our patience with, business as usual and things getting done. I believe the people are speaking loud and clear that it's time to make things happen in this community. And it's hard for them to blame each other when they were all sitting on panels on the council except for one. And, they're all aware of what's gone on in the past. Now we want to know what's going to go on in the future.
Now can you introduce yourself and give us a little background about yourself? You almost look like a Shakespearean actor.
Well, that was pleasant. That made it worth getting up at 5
good.
This
That's
morning,
good.
Okay?
That's good.
I'm Troy Scouten Sr., PRC Productions. Most of the people in the film community around here know me. And as I mentioned earlier, I do the commercials for Bravo Mike, and I haven't done one for you yet. And I think you would look fantastic
Thank you.
On television.
Thank you very much. I think
so
the rest of these studios are very nervous about this show.
I can understand that.
It's a boiling cauldron.
It seems as such. We're covering this because we believe in the process.
But you believe in the idea of representative government and being involved in local politics.
Absolutely. Being in and
God
around.
God bless you. God bless you.
Being in and around the Army for most of my adult life before I started this film stuff, I have seen situations where people actually were at risk of their life and well-being to vote in elections. And the fact that we can have free and open elections in this country.
And people are bored.
And so what these guys are trying to do is generate a little bit of interest in the process and bring some young people in as well.
Now, what's different about this particular forum that you think that would kind of separates it from some of the other events?
It's on Mesquite Street.
It's on Mesquite Street.
It's in the historic district.
All right.
Okay. All the houses are made of adobe, and they're like they were before everything got changed downtown.
So this is maybe a little blast from the past from how things used to be done?
Maybe
more
so.
Local, more humble?
More humble, more local, and an opportunity for people to ask questions. Maybe the little old lady that lives across the street can come over and say, hey, why can't this be this way, or why can't we have better lighting?
Sure, or please turn that gosh darn music down.
Please turn that music down. Yes. And so we're excited about it, and I'm very excited to support these guys in this process, even though I had to bring a 7 mic PA over to do it. That's okay.
Right on. Now, well, for us, I think one of the things that's different is that we worked with the panelists, and which was very difficult. There's a nonpartisan race, and so you only have like really one Republican running. And
is there one Republican going to be ritualistically sacrificed?
Well, that's why Mike's here.
Mike, where's the chemicals to pour him?
So that was the difficult part, was trying to find just the Democrat that wasn't already sided on with one campaign or the other. And so, you know, I'm real proud of the people that came together to help us. I've been working with members of our organization, like Rose Garcia from Dead of the Soul, Oscar Vasquez Butler, who's been a tremendous mentor to me and helping me.
Fantastic. How do people get a hold of you if they have some filmmaking or commercial needs? They want to make a spot or something.
We have a great website, prc-productions.com. They can go on the website, or they can look at our brand new distribution company,
mm-hmm.
Borderlands Media.
Wow, fantastic. Any truth to the idea that Mayor Ken Miyagashima is the Hillary Clinton figure of this election?
I don't think after the makeup.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's comforting, at least.
The format will be that, you know, they'll get 2 minutes to come in. The candidates will have 2 minutes to introduce themselves. We're asking the general audience to keep their questions to 30 seconds. You know, make it, you know, about local politics. Make it direct to each of the candidates. No personal attacks. Most of our experience has been that there hasn't been any disrespect in any of our forums. And we won't tolerate any personal attacks. So for us, I think the format and then the idea of having it in our communities where, you know, our neighbors, our family and friends can come and ask a question. I think that's
a beautiful thing about this. So yeah. We got to thank you for doing that. One more time, time and place.
It'll be 6 o'clock this evening from 6 to 8 o'clock at Nopalito's Galleria at 326 South Mesquite Street. Right next to Nopalitos. It'll be in the back of the Galleria there.
And is there any landmark around that might be close by that so people don't really know Mesquite?
The Nopalitos sign is out there, and there's a landmarker that says El Camino Real.
El Camino Real,
Not
yes.
to mention Nopalitos, which has been there 50 yeah. years.
Yeah. That is the
That's
landmark.
That's a pretty good landmark.
That's like having your debate in the Washington Monument.
Yeah,
okay. And you had something to say?
No, I was just going to mention that it's just right down the street from the intersection of Amador and Mesquite Street. So if you're If you're coming up Amador or going down Loman, turn north on Mesquite and you'll be there before you know it. Follow all the cars. Parking will probably be at a premium, so I would suggest an early arrival.
And I would really like to just give a shout out to the Gallegos family for opening up their Galleria for us to have this space so that our community can meet and greet and ask questions of the mayoral candidates.
We would like to encourage young people to go out with their questions. We're going to take questions from them. We'd like for people
but no
to come
conspiracy
out and,
theory questions, kids. Come on.
Yeah, that's, you know.
Well, at least keep them in 30
keep
seconds.
Keep them close. Yeah.
All right. Okay. No FEMA camps, no body bags. All right, guys. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and getting up this early. Really appreciate it. And thanks for sacrificing for the community to do a little kind of, it seems to me, kind of a down-home event so that the candidates have to rub up against the people.
It is, and it's kind of cool. And, you know, we were kicking it around the other day at a meeting that we might do another one.
And when will the Republican be ritualistically burned?
We're not going to do that.
Okay.
Not until after the next form.
Okay. Well, that's good news for the candidates. Thanks for coming in, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay, folks. Thanks, guys. And PRC folks, if you have any advertising needs. Now, we'll take a little break here. We're going to come back and talk to Philip Van Veen. It's 629 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, 805 6180.
Recognize it.
With an aching in my heart, and a pocket full of sand, I'm a long way from home. Love is a loved one's soul in the early morning rain.
All right, it's 6:34, and we have Philip Van Veen. And Philip, good morning to you. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How's it going? I see you have a little looks to be a bird on your shoulder. What is that?
That's an eagle.
All right, it's an eagle. It looks a little undersized, but it has to do with your business.
It does, yeah.
And what's your business?
Eagle Security.
And what do you guys do?
Eagle.
Yeah, there we go. Looks like a parrot, but. Parrot security is not going to scare anybody.
No, it's not. Either will Beagle security.
Yes, so exactly. All right. So you do security. What else do you do?
Actually, I'm running for city council. That's.
Don't you have two
right
businesses?
I do. Yeah. I have another one called Umbrella Mesh Network. It's a.
One more time.
Umbrella Mesh Network. It's an alarm communication business. So the public doesn't really hear about it, but there's alarm companies around the state that utilize it for the transport system for their signals.
Oh, that's cool. All right. So how do you get into this area? How do you get into security and computers and stuff?
Oh, man, I've done it almost my entire life.
Okay.
I kind of fell in it at a young age in Roswell.
Uh-huh.
And went from there. So I've been in that business a long time.
Cool. All right. Okay. So you've been interested in politics. A lot of people get into politics, have been interested in politics their whole life. So what was your introduction to politics?
Well, I've always followed politics, but I've never really been interested in serving in any position before. It's only been the last 4 years, really, that has cropped up at all. In the last 2 years, it's gotten really bad. I've looked at where our city's headed. I've looked at what's going on with our city.
Could you do a summary of the city which caused you to jump into the race?
Yeah, parts of it I can. There's a bad anti-business climate right now. If you talk to almost any new candidate out there, they'll tell you the same thing. There's an anti-business climate within the city of Las Cruces, and that's caused part of the issues that's going on. But at the same time, our gross receipts tax has gone up to a level that we're now matched with Santa Fe. Our unemployment has gone up. Our growth rate has gone exponentially down. We're at 2%, by the way, for this decade so far, and we're 5 years in. And
the goal is 0%, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
what I understand.
Well, 2% pretty much is just the babies being born here. You know, it doesn't really it doesn't really add to
well,
the growth rate.
I mean, I can to give the city leaders one little bit of credit. They have taken global warming seriously, and they're doing what they can to fight against it.
Very much so.
Other than that, I don't know what else they've achieved. So, all right. So you're a businessman. You have your finger on the pulse of the economy locally.
I believe I do. Yes.
And so it's an underperforming economy. Do you think it's just gravity has been canceled in this area? Are we under different laws or rules that we can't grow or what?
Well, I think it's actually all generated internally. I think we can turn this around pretty quickly. You know, let me say first off that I'm a firm believer that our city government needs to get back to a position where our city councilors understand that they are the servants of the people. They're there to represent the people. They're not there to represent the government.
What are they? What? That's a brilliant point. Repeat that, would you?
Okay. The city councilors are servants of the people. They should not be representing the government. They should be representing the people. It's a big thing with me, and I talk about it all the time in my campaign, is that we need to get to the point that our city councilors remember their job is to represent the people. It's not to sit in city hall. It's not to dictate everything to everybody. Realistically, if there's something going on in your neighborhood, your city councilor should be knocking on your door and saying, hey, what's your feelings on this?
Yeah, of course. Now, do you think it's appropriate for Olga Pedroza to roll her own cigarettes up on at her seat? You know, she's rolling cigarettes and she's looking at pictures of Karl Marx and stuff. Is that appropriate?
Well, I suppose as long as she has a little vacuum to clean up after herself.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know how big her purse is, but I did hear seriously that she had a picture of Fidel Castro on her desk about 20 years ago when somebody went to see her. That could be true. It might be apocryphal, but I think it sums up the woman.
I think I'll stay out of that conversation.
Yeah, well, I really think that what you're saying is it really resonates. People that are standing up for the government like it's been pushed around all its life.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
It's quite odd. I really, you know, I firmly believe it. And a lot of people don't understand here in Las Cruces, we actually have a city manager. You know, the city manager's job is to manage the city. That's what he's supposed to do. City council is there to set policy and guidance for that, but they're supposed to do it as a representative of the people. This is what's best for the people, not what's best for the city, not what's best for government workers, but what's best for the people. And we really need to get back to that point.
Vox Populi, Vox Dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Folks, let's take a little break here. We're going to come back and talk to Philip Van Veen, but I love the way that resonates. The representatives are here to represent the people. That's our form of government, according to Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. And, of course, the government already has a lot of representation out there. They're called bureaucrats. So we don't need our public officials to stand up and lecture us and demand more rights for the government. I love that. That sounds beautiful. 640, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, getting into a very interesting conversation with Philip Van Veen. It's District 2. What's your contact information?
I can be contacted a couple different ways. I have email. You can contact me at philip@boatvanveen.com. You can call 323-1477, just not right now. That's the two best ways. And then I've got an event tonight too, by the way, that we'll talk about maybe on your next break, coming up tonight.
All right. Or pull the fire alarm and you'll be out with your security crew, right?
Yeah. Something like that. Don't do that though.
All right. We'll be right back. It is 6:43, and for your temperature out there, it is cooler today, and I can't imagine that when you get up, you don't think to yourself that it is starting to feel a lot like fall. 55 degrees, and it's just, I guess, if you like that type of thing, it's real nice. 74 the high, 56 the low, so we're at right now the low where it's going to be tonight. We have Philip Van Veen. Philip, okay, so you talked about the fact that we have a broken economy here and we have tone-deaf leadership and really like a bunch of Helen Kellers up there. I'm interpreting.
Yeah, I didn't go quite that far, but
okay.
But, I can't disagree entirely.
All right, so you have an event tonight?
I do. Yeah, we're gonna have an event. It'll be at Lorenzo's on University, and it's a meet and greet event. It's gonna run from 4 to 8. Just a drop in. It's for people who live in District 2. Drop in and, you know, meet the candidate type thing. Ask me personal questions. Ask me questions about what, you know, what my platform is, what I'm planning on accomplishing. It gives people a chance for a one-on-one, other than me knocking at their door, which I'm doing that also. But I think it'd be a good opportunity for people to just come in. We're going to have Lorenzo's is going to, you know, prepare some snack foods, some finger foods and stuff like that. So there'll be food to eat and things to drink.
All right. So what are your issues? If you got into, got elected into the city council, what would you advocate for?
Well, there's a couple things. One of the things you'll notice on the top of my flyer is the words cut. And it's something that I take very, very seriously. I think we have a major problem right now with doing business with the city. I've talked to so many businesses that have had to wait 2 years to get a permit. In fact, just the other day, one of the mayoral candidates mentioned it at a forum that it took her 2 years to get her permit to open her business. And it's, you know, we have so much red tape, so many hoops here that you have to jump through to get anything accomplished. And it's trickled down. It's not just businesses now. You know, we've had a lady that I worked with who had problems with putting up a portable carport at her house. And the red tape that she had to go through to do that. So it's gotten pretty bad. It's hard to get anything accomplished within the city. And there seems to be more of an attitude of let's see what we can do to get in the way rather than let's see what we can do to help. And we need to get back to the fact, I mean, I understand we need things built safely.
Well, but I mean, it's not like you drive through the city like it's a marvel of technology, like the safety just leaps out at you, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, it's you know, there needs to be some common sense in there. And things going on, you know, if somebody's buying a carport at Lowe's and installing it themselves, they're, you know, it's quite frankly, it probably shouldn't even need a permit other than to make sure that the back sets are set right and they're not in, you know, infringing on their neighbor's property or something.
Well, I mean, it is an extraordinary, but if you listen to the candidates and, I've heard, Mayor Ken Miyagashima say, for example, when they were talking about trying to get the government to take our land for the Oregon Mountains, that he was speaking for everybody. I really don't think everybody in this valley is a progressive, an extreme leftist, you know?
Oh, I don't think so either. Historically here, I think there's Las Cruces has a lot of Democrats in it, but historically those Democrats have been either moderates or conservatives. They've been much more conservative than the average Eastern Democrat, if you will. And I think a lot of people fit within that category.
Yeah.
And that category is kind of overlooked. You're either Democrat or you're Republican, and there's no other options in there. And the bottom line is we're all people. Most people are either, you know, liberal or conservative, yeah, and or moderate. And there's not those, you know, the parties is, for most people, I don't think the party is as big of a deal as it is for the party itself.
And I think there's a lot of people who are listening to the show on a regular basis that are conservative Democrats. I've been told that. So, I mean, and that I absolutely think that there's a lot of people in this county that are conservative that in another state would probably be registered Republican. You know, it's just the history of this area that it's more Democrat.
All right. I think, you know, the majority of the people I talk to here all seem to think the same thing. Where'd the common sense go? I think as long as common sense is used and good reason is used in our political officials, then you know, we'll move forward as a community.
All right. So we've got about maybe 6 or 7 minutes when we come back. Well, what do you want to talk about? What's your thing that you want people to remember about you?
Well, I'll tell you, we can talk about just about anything. I'm open to questions if you have questions you want to ask me. But we can also talk about some of the things we can talk about as impact fees within
the
city.
All right. Kelly O'Connell, 648. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 to text. And we will be back to continue with Philip Van Veen. It's Kelly here, and I've heard that Mayor Ken may return to sumo wrestling. And well, that would be a great loss for our city, wouldn't it? But he misses the belly bumping. He misses the rub downs, the camaraderie with the other sumo wrestlers. And he misses, quite frankly, the warm sake. Maybe we'll do a show on his past exploits. Anyway, we've got Philip Van Veen here. And Philip, let's talk about impact fees.
All right, impact fees. I'll tell you right now, for those of you who don't keep up with what's going on with the city on impact fees, you might get a little upset at this, but I'm just going to tell it how it is.
Let's do it, man.
All right.
Let's speak truth to power.
December 2014 is the figure I'm using. It hasn't really changed much, but they're in the process of raising it again. First of all, let me clarify a couple things what impact fees are. Impact fees are assessed on a developer or a builder. When they're building a house, we're going to talk specifically about residential here. So they're building a house and the impact fees are added on, and it is said that it's to help pay for infrastructure within that area is a large part of it. Just so people understand, when a developer develops an area, they have to put in the roads, they have to put in the sidewalks, they have to put in the sewage, they have to put in the fire hydrants. All of that is paid for already by the developer, which means you buying the house are paying for that already. By the way, and the neighborhood park is also put in by the developer. So
fortunately, they don't have to import the transients. They're already loitering around.
They're already in the area. That's right. All of that's already paid for through the developer, and you're already paying for it. The current impact fee on a 2,500-square-foot house, which is the average house right now, is $6,727 that is charged to the builder. He has to pay that impact fee, but it's put on your mortgage because in turn you're paying for it. And then there's an additional surcharge, and get this, at $666. And I'm not making this up. That's the figure. But that is the surcharge that you will pay, and that's usually, I think, put on your utility bills or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how that fee applies. But that, you know, that gives a total of over $7,000 that you're paying up front on that property.
Well, I've had people come on, including the mayor, who have said that impact fees have no real impact on building. It's just a hoax, and that he brought a bunch of charts and stuff. But I did get a lot of calls and emails off the air about that. People were furious, but they didn't want to get the wrath of the city on them.
Well, the impact fees are real. They are big. You can check with the city yourself. Ask them for the numbers. They are much larger on commercial, and this is one of the reasons why I think we don't have new businesses coming into our area, is because of our impact fees. We have a high gross receipts tax. We have these huge impact fees. It's very difficult for them to get permits and build here. And altogether, when you start wrapping all that stuff together, that's where part of this anti-business climate that everybody's talking about comes in. And I think we need to curb that. And part of that is to relook at these impact fees. You know, they're in the process of raising those again, and although there are areas that the impact fees are really low in and other areas that they're really high, I think basically what we need to do is look at the impact fees as a whole and maybe balance that out some. Because there are areas that we should have some fee in to cover, you know, fire and police presence in the area.
All right. So if you got into office, what would be your goal on the impact? To reduce them a little bit?
I would love to see them reduced. I think the first thing we need to do is sit down as a city council, look at the hard numbers on those and exactly what they're being spent on. And then look at a way to, first of all, take and move those around a little bit, that rather than raising them again, switching what goes where and possibly and hopefully reducing those fees. Yes.
How about getting rid of them?
A lot of them probably could be. There's the possibility of getting rid of a lot of those fees.
Let's have a get rid of the fee pledge here, folks. I wonder if your opponent would agree to. If he gets elected, whoever gets elected, just get rid of these damn fees.
I can't speak for him. I can only speak for me, and I'll do what I can.
Will you ask him that no matter who makes it, that we'll get rid of the impact fees? Because I've heard a lot of people complain about them, and it's like a lot of things out there. We'd bring something in because it's going to make life better, and it makes it a lot worse, and then nobody can imagine living without it.
Yeah, and then that happens. And again, they're pretty high. Will I ask him? No, I'll leave it up to you to do that.
Oh, you're not standing up to the challenge. That's too bad.
Well, it's one
Why
of those
should
things.
People vote for you? Will you get rid of the impact fees? Why wouldn't you challenge him to get rid of it?
The only place I see my when we're in debates.
I know, but let's get rid of these fees.
Oh, I agree. I completely
agree.
Let's just
kill him. Greg Smith, kill him. Why don't you call out your opponent to kill the impact fees?
Well, I'll call him out to actually let's look at those, yes, and change those impact fees. But I don't think...
Let's strangle the impact fees in the crib.
I don't think that... That's a fair place for me to kind of call him out on something like that. I think that the voting public needs to call him out on that.
Why can't you call him out?
I'm running against him.
That's the whole point.
Let's try to get people to look at these impact fees. And one of the things I want to do on these impact fees is wake people up to the situation that it exists.
Demanding that he agree to try to cancel them, it would be bringing people's attention to them.
Let's do that. Let's look at those impact fees, both him and I, and see where we can reduce those at and what can be done away with. There's a lot of those fees that I think that we can eliminate. We may not be able to eliminate 100%, but we can get rid of a lot of them.
All right, Philip Van Veen, we're almost out of time. Why don't you give your contact information again?
Sure. There's a couple of ways to get a hold of me. You can reach me by email, philip@votevanveen.com. You can call me at 323-1477. And you can also see me tonight at Lorenzo's if you'd like from 4 to 8.
Your number one more time?
323-1477.
Thank you very much for coming on. I know you've contacted me a number of times. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem.
We'll have you on again soon. Maybe we can get you and Greg on here together and we can have a debate over the impact fees and the incredible negative impact that that's had on the city and the county.
I would love to do that. And I would love to do it with people calling in with questions too.
Yes, where can I go to get my impact fee money back? Philip Van Veen, he's running for second district as a moderate Democrat, and the one Republican in this race is rumored to be they're gonna sacrifice him, right? They're gonna burn him at the stake during one war. Is that just a rumor? Or is that been established?
I think that's just a rumor.
All right, Kelly O'Connell. And it's great to have Philip on here. And AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, 805 6180. We'll be back. All right, so we heard from from a local candidate, Philip Van Veen, and also there's a forum tonight at Napolito's Gallery on Mesquite Street. Starts at 6 if you want to go down and rub shoulders with the mayoral candidates and get your questions asked. We'll have more and more of the candidates on here. Of course, it would be helpful if they contacted me. Philip Van Veen called me, I think, 4 or 5 times. And, but if you want to be on the show, give me a call. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, my name is David.
David, good morning.
I have a question for you.
Thank you for calling. How are you doing today, David?
Yes, David. I'm doing great. Heaven for you.
Yes, sir.
What is it that you have against Mayor Miyagashima?
I love Mayor Ken Miyagashima. He's my hero. Why do you ask?
Oh, because it's like every time I hear your show in the morning as I'm driving to work, it's like you're always bashing him.
Are you related to Mayor Ken Miyagashima?
No, not a bit.
What do you
but
think? Hold on a second, David. David, what do you think of the mayor? Yes, what do you think of the state of the city?
I think that it could be better, but I think it's great.
Okay, it's great. So what would you improve on?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what I would improve on it, but I'll tell you what. I feel safe. I have water. I have electricity. I have gas. I have sewer. I have just about everything I need. If I need an ambulance, it'll come. If I need a policeman, it'll come. If I need any type of help at all, I can always go somewhere that I can find the help.
So
it's a great place to live. It's a great place to live. The university is fantastic. Everything is almost the way I want it.
Okay. And so do you mind me asking what sector of the economy you're employed in?
I am an educator.
All right. And what's the state of the school system here? Are you at NMSU or are you at?
I'm a school teacher, elementary.
Okay. And what's the state of the school system here, in your opinion?
Well, it could be okay. It's okay. It could be better, but it's really not the mayor's fault. I would blame it on Santa Fe. I would blame it on the state school board, but not at the least on the mayor. Let me tell you something about the impact that you guys were talking about.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was listening, and I was saying, well, you see, part of the thing is some people want to be conservative when they want to be conservative or liberal when they want to be liberal. I mean, why should the rest of the city pay for somebody to build a house and have the sewer, to have the electricity, to have the pavement, the concrete, everything around their house beautifully, the parks and everything? So why shouldn't the owners pay for all that stuff?
All right, David, let me ask you this.
The impact fees are necessary to beautify the city. They're important.
David, how beautiful is our city?
I think it's great. I've seen places where I wouldn't even begin to live.
All right, but what if you've heard of the concept of unintended consequences. What if the impact fees were a great idea in the concept of doing what you're talking about, bringing in funds to beautify the city and pay for all this stuff? But what if
is the alternative? What is the alternative?
David, can I finish? David. Well, no, I mean, nobody wants to live in a, or everybody here doesn't want to live in a colonia, obviously, but just let me finish my question. What if there is this concept of unintended consequences? What if the unintended consequences of these impact fees are to bring down the level of construction so that it harms the economy?
How can beautifying the city bring down the economy? You want a $200,000 house with a $10 road, with $5 sidewalks, with no sewer?
Well, I mean,
is that what you want? What you want?
No, of course.
No.
David, of course.
I really think that the mayor is doing a great job. I really think it could improve, but no matter who you would put in there, it could still improve.
Well, it's somewhat.
We don't live in a perfect society.
Well, yes, but I mean, a perfect society would probably be a utopian socialist society, which is not achievable.
Yeah, and I don't want that. I don't want that. No, I don't want a socialist society. I don't want a socialist society. I don't want anything.
David, a rising tide raises all boats. There is two ways to build a tax base. One way is to increase taxes, as we're doing now. The second way is to grow the economy, which naturally raises taxes. So,
yeah, but a rising tide will raise bigger boats higher.
Yes.
You know, don't use cliches that mean nothing.
They
mean absolutely nothing. You know, everybody knows that when we get a tax break, the richer guys will get a bigger tax break.
When we get taxed
more, it's the poor guys that
are
get
you,
taxed more.
David, hold on.
You have
a very
educated audience.
Hold on a second here. I know you're getting wound up, but let me ask you this. You're talking about we've got water, we've got food, we've got shelter. I mean, it just...
Oh, don't we?
Yeah, we do, but I mean...
Have you ever called the police and they didn't come?
I don't think that's the issue. The issue is, and
of
I turn...
Of course it is.
David, let me finish, please.
Of course it is.
I know, come on, I'm not an unruly fifth grader here. Come on now, give me a break here. Let me talk a little bit. To say that my city is successful because I turn on the water, to turn on the tap and water comes out. Come on, there's got to be a higher standard than that, David. Shame on you. Come on.
Of course, there is a higher standard. Are you safe in your house?
Yeah, but I'm.
Are you safe in your house? Try living in California with the brownouts and the blackouts and $9,000 water bills.
All right, so I'm
going
to turn down his mic a little bit, like he would send a fifth grader into the corner. But David, you know, we've got to have higher standards.
Maybe you should be put in the corner.
Other cities have water and they have food and they have shelter, but they also have growth. David, we need growth. We need to have a growing economy. Don't you want the kids in your classes to be able to, after they go to high school and college, stay here and stay around their families if they want to? The only way we can do that, David, come on now.
You're
nonstop talking, getting in the way of having a conversation.
It has grown a lot.
Yes. If you really care about those families, you're going to support economic growth so that these kids can go to college and stay around here to be near their families. Isn't that correct?
No. I want to go to college and do whatever they want.
What if they
want
to stay here?
Why would I want to stay here?
David, what do you do when kids won't shut up? You put a dunce cap and stick them in the corner. If families want to have their children graduate from university and stay here and work, this guy's just talking and just like turning on a TV. If you want them to stay here and have a job, we have to grow the economy. The economy is not producing any jobs. The economy last year, the year before, produced 300 jobs. We need a functional economy. No, water and food and shelter and safety are not enough. This isn't Central America.
So you're bashing the mayor because the economy only grew 300
jobs. I'm not really even bashing the mayor. I'd like him to come on I'm having a little bit of fun with him.
Yeah, but you bash him because he doesn't come, and he doesn't come because you're just gonna rape him.
This is not a third grade class. Just back and forth here. He's come on the show. He's shown a lot of difference.
I think it's a great
thing. Thanks for the call, David. Folks, if you call in, please let's have a little back and forth. Did you have a comment, Bob? I know you're sitting there rolling your eyes.
My comment is, if you drive south on I-25 on that nice new road, as soon as you get to El Paso County in Texas, you will find all of this growth, a huge amount of stores, commerce. It's just stunning that there's a difference in a growing economy there versus what we have here.
Yeah, we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Juan.
Juan, I really appreciate your call. Let me ask you something. I recognize your voice from before. David is an elementary school teacher, and he says to have water and food and shelter and to have police when you call them, that's enough to have a good city. Do you agree?
Well, you know, that's a good thing, yes, I recognize that, but, you know, the thing is that we need to have more. We need to have business that works, and why do we want to educate our kids just to send them somewhere else? Because they have to go after college because there's no jobs here for them.
That's exactly right. And, Juan, do you have a large family?
Well, I got about, not too big, only like 6 kids.
Don't you want your kids? This is Hispanic culture. Hispanics are very family oriented, and so why can't we build an economy where people can keep their families around them? This has got to be a very painful issue.
Well, the problem is we can't build an economy because we have the government that is too involved in everything, that tries to control everything that we do.
I couldn't agree more.
I agree. It's good for the government to help us with lottery and police and stuff, but They interfere too much. It costs too much to build a house because of all these fees. And we're already paying taxes that should cover that.
Yeah, I agree, Juan. Well, thank you very much for the call. Have a good day. Juan is called back in favor of what I was saying. Anyway, people say I'm giving the mayor a hard time, but I did want to ask if he was going to get back in sumo wrestling. Bring a world championship here, please. We want a world champion to live here. Go to those world sumo wrestling events and bring us back a championship. In the meantime, come on my show, Ken. Come on the show, please. Folks, we'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, what's up, buddy? How's it going? We're not on the air, but go ahead.
A comment for that Dave guy.
Yeah.
Apparently, his fifth grade education has not been adequate enough to teach him that it comes down to the word accountability is escaping him. And if he is one of the people that's responsible for educating the kids here in Las Cruces, wow.
We're in bad trouble. Hey, can I put you on hold for that comment, Pedro?
Yes.
Thanks. It's a couple of minutes. Just hang in there. I always love your calls. Put you on hold.
Okay. All right, Kelly.
Yeah, what is this? This is Pablo Neruda poem or something? Food, water, bread, shelter. I must be a socialist.
oh, I don't know, maybe
please.
On KOBE, there's no better place to be.
It's 7:20, and we do have the weather guy here, Bob. But first, Pedro has a statement to say to the teacher, David. Pedro?
Yes. Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Okay, so this David guy, for one, man, if he treats his kids in his class the way he treated you by ignoring you, totally wanting to steamroll over you in the conversation, that speaks very poorly of his skills as a teacher or
it
whatever
sure
it is.
It sure does. Shame on you, David.
And apparently his fifth grade education that he was bragging about has failed to teach him that one of the functions of being an elected official is that you have to take criticism because that comes with the territory. And I feel sorry for him if he doesn't understand that. And in about 30 seconds, I could think of about 10 things that's wrong with this city.
Well,
this is one of the poorest run cities that I've had the experience of living in.
You know, I mean, this idea that we need to be just breathlessly thankful for having water when we turn on the tap.
Well, if I remember right, my water system was in well before the current mayor was. There was a police department in place well before he was in. We had fire protection. He has had nothing to do with any of that.
Of course not. And I mean, this idea, I don't understand this idea of worshiping the leadership of, we're living in a republic, you know. Republic is a place where people are supposed to serve. A republic is actually a very Christian form of government because it's based on servant leadership. You're supposed to get up and serve people. And if you can't do that anymore, if you lose your way or you lose your mind, get the heck out of office.
Right. Back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, when you were a civil servant, you took that term seriously. And it was, hey, I'm here to serve the people. These new leaders that we have, they have no concept of that. Here's a few examples. They have built brand new bridges and overpasses here in Las Cruces. Do you think we would get some exit ramps? Do you think the mayor would have a voice in that? I do. We have left turn arrows here in Las Cruces that to get in behind an intersection, you got to wait on the left turn arrow before you can make a turn. In other cities, they have signs that say it's a flashing green arrow. If the traffic is clear, you can go ahead. If it's not, you got to yield. School zones. Have you been through the school zone between on Valley Drive at Mayfield? 85-90% of the kids cross at a crosswalk that's not even protected by the school zone. The school zone starts well north of that, and it goes on for an inordinate amount of time. I could come up with 1,000 things. That's just right off the top of my head, Kelly.
Well, I mean, get over this idea that we have minimal functioning society, therefore we need to be, you know, we need to bow down at the feet of Ken Miyagishima. I mean, where is minimum competence on the economy? I mean, why shouldn't we want our kids to be able to live here?
Exactly. I feel like the economy is being stifled by these people that are in charge right now, and that crap needs to end.
Yeah,
this business about somebody getting a permit to build to go into business taking months and months.
Years.
I would solve that in the matter of a week.
Years. You're talking about years, and I've heard this again and again, and I'm not even looking for the information. I'm talking to somebody about their business, and they kind of like go back to the beginning, and you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous that the mayor acts like he was sent here from another planet, like Clark Kent, you know, like Superman. And
I kind of believe that he was sent here from somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, why don't we get rid of this utopianism that just destroys everything? How about this? Here's a goal. Why don't we have a local economy that can grow and increase more taxes so we don't have to raise the tax rates and so people can get jobs and they don't have to be on government state aid, you know?
No kidding, right? I can't figure out what they have to gain from stifling the economy. I just can't figure it.
Power.
You can have power and have a successful economy, and it's even sweeter than they don't realize it.
Not if you're a far leftist and your dream is a model community that's, you know, comes out of a 20-year plan and you force, a bus system on people who voted it down and you force tax increases on people that obviously don't want it and can't afford it. We've got 25% of the city living in poverty, another 25% barely above poverty. And David calls up, says we need to thank God each and every day that we have Ken Miyagashima leading the way.
Correct. That's pathetic. And maybe people don't understand the concept of what true leftism and socialism really is. I think that might be the key.
I think it is, too. But I appreciate the call, Pedro. Have a great day, folks. I do think we're in serious danger of losing our enlightened leadership to the world of professional sports. Ken Miyagashima, don't become a sumo wrestler. Stay here, lead our city. But if you do lead our city, help us have an economy. But come on this show, Ken! Get rid of your loincloth and your warm sake. Ken, come on this show. Let's have a debate. Get rid of these stupid impact fees. All right, folks, Kelly O'Connell will be right back to talk to the weather guy.
I'll get the local buzz. News from Las Vegas.
All right, so we've got I got the weather guy here, but first a few headlines for you. Matt Drudge has been told by a member of the U.S. Supreme Court that it is over for Matt Drudge. He can no longer even use headlines because of new copyright laws. I'll believe it when I see it. Got some texts here. Kelly, I thought Phillips meet and greet is at Lorenzo's on University. I think that's what he said. Kelly, it would be great to hear the candidate's opinion on property rights on these candidates' shows that you have planned, Mary C. Check the stats, Kelly, for Mike. Gay marriages have a failure rate about the same as heterosexual marriages. That is untrue. I read a study out of the Netherlands, which has the longest-serving gay marriage laws. The divorce rate for heterosexual marriage has gone down to about 45%. Gay male marriage, the divorce rate is 55% higher than that, and the divorce rate for female gay marriage, I thought was 167%, but I went back and reread the article. They originally thought it was 167% higher than regular marriage, but they now said it's 200% higher than gay male marriage. So I don't know. But it's not the same rate. All right, here's another text. Is there a generational effect? Okay, so that's from another show. The abortion clinic is illegal in that zone on Loman. The mayor and his hands are tied. Lydia, I guess the mayor has signed off on the abortion mill. Ask Pedro to run for mayor. He may have taken Ken's kryptonite. Kelly, can I be a guest Monday, 7 to 8? Richard Hall, candidate for District 4. Richard, you're always welcome on the show. Let's do it. All right, weather guy, what's going on?
Talk a little bit about Hurricane Joaquin. And that's an interesting case study because it spun up right on the Bahamas. Spun up to Category 4, and as it reached its maximum intensity, the forecast tracks were all over the place. There were some of them that were running into Washington, D.C., into the Appalachians, some of them up into Nova Scotia, and other tracks brought it out in the Atlantic Ocean. That speaks to the fact that some of the best tools we have, our numerical models, aren't perfect. There's a very wide range of solutions that were proposed, and you know, the Hurricane Center never did issue a warning for the Southeast Coast, because it did go out. One of the things, this is a little bit geeky, but one of the things that I noticed, that the European Center model is the one that came closest, and also the European Center model 3 years ago in 2012 was the only model that was indicating that what became Superstorm Sandy would actually go into the New York City area. And this is like a week out.
Oh, so the obvious question here is, if we're using modeling to predict hurricanes, then aren't we using similar models for global warming prediction?
Similar, not exactly the same.
Not exactly the same, but what does it say about modeling in general?
It says that it's a very precarious endeavor or enterprise, especially since none of the climate models can even forecast what's happened in the past, let alone have success in forecasting the future.
Now, I was kind of fascinated. The ship, that 800-foot cargo ship that went into the storm, apparently was cut off from the latest storm tracking, but they didn't think that it was going to turn into that level of a hurricane, or they would have never sailed in that direction if their equipment had been broken down hours earlier.
Well, as I indicated at the beginning, Hurricane Joaquin spun up and intensified very rapidly, and it went from Category 1 to Category 4, I think, in 24 hours.
Well, that once again causes me to ask you, how good is human modeling of weather?
Well, it's very good if you understand the practicalities and limitations of it.
All right, so why has so many of these global warmings, apocalyptic scenarios, we were told a long time ago that we would have no more ice on the surface of the earth because the temperature was rising so quickly.
Indeed. The person that made that prediction was Al Gore, and he said that the Arctic ice cover would disappear by 2014. It turns out that's just not true. And
it's growing right now.
Indeed. And there's a very definite pattern to the Arctic ice growth and meltback with the seasons. But the thing that people misunderstand, perhaps, is that it's the winds up that blow the ice out through the Fram Strait that determines the amount of Arctic ice, not the amount of carbon dioxide in the air.
Or not even necessarily the temperature.
That's, you know, and indeed that's correct, because there's two circulation patterns. One's called Beaufort Gyre, and the other one is called the Transpolar Drift. And those circulations determine the amount of winds out of the north. And if those are very strong and blow that ice down the Fram Strait, then it goes into the Gulf Stream influenced area.
Okay, so in honor of Joaquin, how do you pronounce it?
Joaquin.
Joaquin. Okay, in honor of that, a little Patsy Cline here. We'll be right back to talk to Bob, the weather guy. Kelly O'Connell, AM Los Cruces, AM 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-6180 to text. Joaquin After Midnight, Patsy Cline.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you.
All right, so we've got Bob here, and Bob Enlich, the weather guy, and climatologist, or anyway,
earth scientist,
whatever. So we have been told by Al Gore that the United Nations said the sea level was going to rise 17 inches by 2010. Al Gore said in his Oscar-winning film, An Inconvenient Truth, says it's going to go to 20 feet. It's going to rise 20 feet. And so what happened to that prediction?
That, like many of these alarmist predictions, turned out to be just absolutely wrong. Let's just review some of the basics about sea level and sea level rise. We live in what's called the Holocene, and so it's about 10 to 20,000 years old. So sea level started
rising.
That is
the age that we're in, right?
That's right.
Okay. It's called Holocene?
The Holocene. And in the Holocene, there have been a number of warm and cold periods. Mostly, it's been warmer than it is today, and we know that from the ice core records.
Can we take a call here?
Sure.
Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly.
Is this Takashi?
Yes, sir.
I somehow knew that this would smoke you out of your den. Go ahead.
Yeah. I wanted Mr. Bob, is that his name, to explain the floods in South Carolina and what gives them the criteria to call it the 1,000-year flood, even though I don't think people have been here that long. And why is it that after this storm, the waters are still rising? I would like to hear his scientific take on that. I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Takashi. Bob?
Okay, so this is the time of year when we had the first cold front come down, real strong cold front. So there's very strong temperature difference between the cool air over the Carolinas and the warm Gulf Stream water. And that warm Gulf Stream water extended out into the Caribbean, and that's why Joaquin blew up so dramatically. And it's the temperature contrast, that temperature difference in the presence of a very moist environment because the very high dew points, water content of the air. And that is what's causes storms to blow up. And storms blowing up at the Atlantic coast under that circumstance is not an unusual situation. Takashi has a point in that people have said, and in fact, the governor said, this was a 1,000-year flood. Not so. First of all, he's correct. We don't have records for that long. But even the news report of the fact that this event occurred said that it was the floods were higher in 1936. Well, how could that possibly be? You just think about it. So we do get these storms, and when what happens is that the storms rainfall falls both over the ocean and over the Carolina lowlands and the Carolina highlands. And so it takes a while for that water to run off. And so that's the reason that in some places the flood waters are rising days later, because it takes the time for that water to work its way downstream. So that accounts for the flood waters are still rising in the coastal plain areas immediately in the lowlands.
All right. So, okay. So you answered that one now as we were talking about.
Okay.
Sea level rise.
We're talking about sea level rise. Right?
We do have another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Ted. I just have a quick question for Bob. Doppler Dave spent 20 minutes scaring everybody about a tornado here the Monday night. Well, none of the other TV stations said a word about it during Doppler Dave's 20 minutes. And forecast it's a regular program. Could you have Bob review tornadic activity in this area?
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Well, I was watching Doppler Dave. I was driving back from Taos.
You are your own Doppler Dave.
Indeed. We can just talk about that a little bit. What's happening right now? The reason that we've had these strong storms in the area is that there is a very strong trough of cold air aloft that's moving across, and it has come from the Pacific coast. And right now, it's down in the boot heel of New Mexico.
Is it related to El Nino?
It is, in the sense that El Nino is making these storms stronger than they otherwise would be. As a matter of fact, we have only about 8% of New Mexico is in drought. according to the drought center. And copious rains that we've had in the spring and now as we go into the fall transition are the reason that the drought numbers are going down. So we're getting the water. It's very late in the season. So what causes though is the existence of a layer of air that works like this. If it's lifted, as in the case we have this bigger storm, the bottom of the air cools at one rate, and the top of the layer moves at another rate, and that makes the air very, very unstable. And when it gets super unstable like that, you get spin up. We have these new radars out called the WSR 88, and there's a mode, and even the layman can look at this, where you can look at the spin of the air. So it's a Doppler shift of along the radar beam,
and
you can measure. You can see that,
and it apparently was a shift for Doppler Dave as well.
Oh, indeed, and you can see this. And that's a very good predictor of the future tornadic activity, that Doppler shift. And when you look at it on the Weather Service radar, you can see a difference in color. One's green and the other one's sort of a purple color, and you can see that.
All right, let's take a little respite here. We'll come back and talk about the lie of what has been called by, and I mentioned this before, the Daily Telegraph in 2009. Rise of the sea levels is the greatest lie ever told. And anyway, we'll be back in just a second to talk about the sea level, the fake sea level rise.
I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight searching for you.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly, could you play a little bit of the George Carlin, Hippy Dippy Weatherman?
Hippy Dippy Weatherman.
Yeah, all there's right. Clips from that.
All right, man, thanks. Hippy Dippy Weatherman. All right, so we've got the thousand-year flood that we talked about and the local tornado. All right, how about the greatest lie ever told, rise of sea levels?
Well, sea level has been rising for over 20,000 years. So the fact that sea level should be rising today is not a big deal. But it turns out that actually sea levels were higher in the Roman warm period and the...
They're not rising for 20,000 years. They've even dropped.
They did drop. And the reason they dropped was a very sharp decrease in temperature that happened right after 1300. And there are records called proxy records as well as historical records that show this very precipitous.
What they call the mini ice age?
That was the beginning of the little ice age. You're absolutely correct, Kelly. And what that points out is that we have these natural variations from warm periods, as the medieval warm period, 1,000 years ago, and then a very sharp cold snap ensued in the 1300s and stayed until about the 1800s. And at that time, sea level fell and the glaciers were actually increasing. So there are records of in France and in northern Italy, villages being crushed by the glaciers in historic times. So that there should be a break in that. It's a good thing. I mean, would you really want to be living in a time when it was so cold the glaciers were advancing on a global basis?
Some people would apparently like to be. Maybe they could reanimate the mastodons and use them for transport. But there's one scientist named, he's a geologist, physicist, Swedish, Nils Axel Mormer.
I know him.
You know him. Formerly chairman of the INCWA, International Commission on Sea Level Changes. And he says that he has used every known scientific method to study sea levels all over the globe. And he says the sea is not rising. it fluctuates, but it hasn't risen in 50 years. If there's any rise in the century, it will not be more than 10 centimeters and with an uncertainty of plus or minus 10 centimeters. So it just seems to me it's just another scare story to justify trillions of dollars in investment in global warming.
I think that's absolutely correct. Myrner has visited the Maldives in person, and he's got photos that he's posted to his website. And you can see actually in the Maldives where sea levels were maybe a foot or two higher than they are now and have actually fell.
All right, let me ask you this. Change subject slightly. What would motivate a scientist to falsify information for global warming? And so you think it's being done knowingly, or do you think these people are so convinced that they're accidentally fudging the data?
I think the answer is both. There is very clear evidence that some people are fudging the data. I'll give you a very good example. You know, right now we have this outrage over VW faking the emissions data, and people are that was deliberate, and so people are outraged about it. But actually, in 1995, when that first press conference said that there is a human imprint on the climate, we've looked at that data. That data was put forth by a fellow named Ben Santer of Lawrence Livermore, and he took a subset of the data, of the upper air data, that showed a rising trend. But if you look at the entire trend, the temperatures were decreasing over that time. So that's deliberate falsification. And that's part of the book, The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science.
And now let me ask you this. Have you ever had a conversation, seeing as how you've been in this business for a long, long time, have you ever had a conversation with anybody who was touting or warning about global warming that admitted behind the scenes, behind closed doors, that they knew you were right and that it wasn't a real problem? Maybe they felt like they had to take that position publicly?
I have not run into that directly, but certainly there's enough evidence of other people having that similar experience. I have not had it, Kelly. So, but if we go back to the history, you can look in history, you know, where in the historical record, and see these warm and cold periods,
and
you can see the effects on humans.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. You see Joaquin, or how do you pronounce it?
Hurricane Joaquin, yes.
Joaquin, walking after midnight. You see that, and you see supposedly a hurricane or parts of a tropical storm heading up to Alaska where they've never been seen before. That's what the headline was. When people say there's stuff happening, 1,000-year floods and everything, doesn't that mean global warming? Doesn't that mean, climate change? What would you say to those people?
There are essays from hundreds of years ago of people who say that it's worse now than it's ever been.
So would human beings look for catastrophe?
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's something in the human psyche that has that appeal to authority that rings true to them.
Well, you know, it is true in the right. You've got the Christians looking for the apocalypse. But it's also on the left. You've got the people on the left looking for the apocalypse, the global warming apocalypse. And it's very similar. On the right, it's caused by sin or the end of the earth or whatever.
On the left, it's the same, too.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's a secular sin to destroy the planet.
Well, you know, what they're saying is that we are ruining the planet. If you actually look at it, that in the Western democracies, the data from the OECD show that we are living much longer than we used to.
Uh-huh.
We're living better lives.
Uh-huh.
And that this availability of inexpensive energy to run things like hospitals and streetlights and having heating and air conditioning available to people of modest means has done incredible good in this work, in
mm-hmm.
this earth,
mm-hmm.
and you can see it in terms of longevity, the decrease in diseases, decrease in air pollution. All these measures indicate that, and actually, when people start living longer, they have fewer babies, so their impact on the environment is even less.
It is true. When societies become more advanced, the birth rate goes down. I got a call for the Hippy Dippy Weatherman, but I'll have to, from George Carlin. We're running out of time on that. I'll have to play it next time you're on. But thanks for coming on, Bob.
Thank you for having me, Kelly. It's been a joy to visit with you.
It's a real pleasure. And so, folks, we've got this debate tonight, 6 to 8. You should try to get over there if you can. And in the meantime, want to thank you for tuning in. But we're going to try to get every single player, every single person who's running for office. I'm going to try to get them on this show. And hopefully the Democratic Party, well, I mean, this is the only gig in town where people can make sure that their opinion is heard and everything. So hopefully we can get a little bit more cooperation from the Democratic Party. And the Republicans, you haven't contacted me in 4 years, so I guess I've given up on you. Anyway, have a great day, and we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Listen to Glenn Beck afterwards. Ciao. I'd love to see you.